Truth About Radio, a WNEW inquiry. Tonight's guest, Commissioner Nicholas Johnson of the Federal Communications Commission. Interviewing Mr. Johnson is Richard K. Doan, nationally syndicated radio TV columnist.
Commissioner Johnson, at age 32, you are not only the newest member of the Federal Communications Commission, but also the youngest member, are you not?
Yes.
Are you the youngest FCC commissioner in history?
I believe so, although I confess I haven't done the research.
I think Newton Minow was 34 or 5 when he came in, wasn't he? And Bill Henry around that age.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You also seem to be the fieriest commissioner on the FCC at this moment. You're really making waves, at least in the trade press. What are you out to do anyway? Can you?
Well, I don't think of myself as fiery or a wave maker, to borrow the figure of speech from my prior incarnation as maritime administrator.
But you're issuing dissents to decisions that the entire commission is making. You had one dissent last week, did you not, in a station?
Yes.
Matter.
Well, I think that the FCC is dealing with what, in my judgment, are the most fundamental and most significant issues in our society today. There's really nothing much more fundamental than communications in terms of a private communication system, which includes telephone and radio, microwave, satellites, and a mass communication system, which WNEW is a part, and television industry, and the rest of it. This is the stuff of humanity, and it's the bedrock of a democratic society, and it seems to me that we have an exploding technology, and each new technological innovation brings with it new social, political, economic, other problems. And these need to be confronted. They need to be thought about. They need to be researched. That is, if anything, the theme that I've been striking since I've been here. And as I was quoted the other day as having said, I think it's unfortunate when the process of reason becomes identified with the forces of evil. I would hope that rational thought, independent and hopefully constructive, would be helpful to all. The regulated industry, which certainly needs an assist from government, as well as the public interest that regulation is designed to serve.
Well, you seem quite unhappy with the way the FCC operates. What are your basic disagreements with it?
Well, I suspect the most fundamental problem is one that I might describe as conception of self on the part of a regulatory commission. Professor Carey, who was formerly chairman of the SEC, has pointed this out in his recent book about the regulatory commissions. Commissions tend to think of themselves as judicial, court-like, disposing of individual cases that are brought before the commission, writing opinions, and then going on to the next case, rather than as administrative, having any responsibility for long-range planning, economic studies, management of their own internal affairs, things of that sort.
You feel, I gather, that they oftentimes can't see the forest for the trees.
Well, that would be one way of describing it. I will say, so far as my colleagues are concerned, I think they're all very able and responsible fellows who are just as committed to serving the public interest as I am. And this is more a problem of institutional structure and the way commissions are set up and the way they've functioned historically, rather than a question of personnel. I think we have, in many ways, some have said at least, one of the ablest FCCs that's liable to be assembled in some time, and certainly having Chairman Hyde, a man with a preeminent qualification for making a seven-man body like this work, and whose heart is in the right place and is trying to do a good job. So it's not just a matter of getting better people all together as much as it is restructuring the institution somewhat, I think.
You would have the commission deal more with policy matters and devote their attention to the broad issues than to take up their time with details, as I gather.
I would. I think they have to. We have some 7,000 stations, in the United States now, radio and television, each of which comes up for a license renewal every 3 years, and you can very quickly compute how much time it's going to take seven commissioners if they deal with each and every antenna movement and increase of power, as well as license renewal on a personal case-by-case basis. It obviously, it simply can't be done that way, particularly when you consider that we also have responsibility not just for broadcasting, but for satellites, microwave, mobile radio, every facet of the communication system in the United States.
The facet that I think concerns the general public the most, Commissioner, is how much the FCC should involve itself in programming on radio and television. What's your view on that?
Well, you're absolutely right, Dick. That's been a central question, I think, in the FCC since its beginnings, 1927, in the old Radio Commission. I think all acknowledge that broadcasting simply has to involve programming, that you can't regulate broadcasting and concern yourself only with technical matters, power, frequency, antennas, things of that kind. I think everyone also recognizes that we don't want the government of the United States or any of its agencies in the business of previewing programs, censoring programs, prescribing precise program formats. Although the argument is often phrased as if the advocates were trying to urge one or the other, in fact, that's not true. Both of those propositions are agreed to by almost everyone, and the dispute then ranges somewhere around the middle ground. The present majority, I think it's fair to say, takes the view that the best way for a nation like ours to regulate programming content is to let the marketplace prevail, let the broadcaster put on whatever he wants to put on, and if the public doesn't like this programming, it will stop listening to his station, and that means his advertising rates will go down, and that means ultimately he will be driven into bankruptcy and out of the broadcasting business. There are others on the commission who think it would be useful for us to play some role in the programming process. And the commission itself endeavors through new program reporting formats and questionnaires and so forth to play some kind of a role. But this has been one of the toughest problems the commission has confronted, I think, since its inception.
Well, isn't the problem in part, Commissioner, that the FCC has never really been able to come to grips with a definition of what public service is?
Well, that's part of it. It's very difficult to describe program quality.
Sure.
And what very much appeals to one person will not appeal at all to someone else. And critics differ as to the quality of not only radio and television shows, but art and architecture and everything else in involving the creative arts.
The other part of the problem is whether the commission or any government officials should say exactly how much, quote, public service, unquote, radio and television should do. I noticed in this dissent that you wrote on the decision last week that you said to renew the licenses of stations which earn millions of dollars in advertising revenue and provide little or no meaningful public service programming, while at the same time denying the present request because of some unarticulated pretense of desire for local service, makes little sense. You also said that that it does not follow through with the much more important task of seeing to it that stations serve as outlets for local expression. Exactly how do you think you can arrive at a satisfaction on your own part that a station is serving as an outlet for local expression?
I think there might be ways in which we could do a better job than we're doing. Precisely what those ought to be would depend, for me, on the outcome of a little more thorough investigation than we've had so far. And I, for one, would be prepared to take a position anywhere along a spectrum of alternatives based on what the evidence would show the facts turn out to be. We certainly could involve the local community in the matter of programming more than we do. we could, for example, make an effort to really bring home to every listener and viewer in a given community a number of facts. One, that the stations are not owned forever in the sense that you own a home or a business by the licensee. They're operated by the licensee as a licensee of the public, at the sufferance of the public, and for most expressly a three-year term. At the end of that three-year term, the license comes up for renewal. And at that renewal time, the views of the public with regard to the quality of public service that has been provided are very relevant. We do have a rule that requires this to be broadcast on a radio station. I personally have never heard it during a lifetime of substantial radio listening. So I suspect that perhaps the rule could be more effective than it is. Two, you could make clear that, which is the fact, that all radio licenses come up for renewal at the same time in a given community. So that if a community wishes to mobilize, if individual groups within the community, a League of Women Voters, the PTA or church group or others wish to take an interest in the license renewals of its local stations, they do have an opportunity to do so in an organized way. They can look at all their stations at the same time. Three, you could make clear to the local community the public service obligation of the local stations, that the stations are not simply doing a favor to a local group by providing local announcements, but are in fact simply carrying out their obligations under the terms of their license to provide this kind of service. Four, you could make clear that the license at renewal time is open in effect to the highest bidder, that those stations that have been doing an inadequate job are at least potentially open to a competitor coming in and saying, I will do a better job. And that licenses can be transferred from one owner to another at renewal time. Now, if this kind of information, along with factual information about the stations themselves, who owns them, what else they own, who in fact is controlling the information and opinion being received by that community over the electronic media, I think then the local community would be in a position to play a more active role in the licensing process and in enforcing its own standards on those local stations. Such an approach, some variant of this, obviously, I'm not spelling out any specific proposal, but just making it a suggestion for purposes of discussion, would be one way of dealing with the program content problem. This brings it back to the local community for local involvement and really the neighborhood and precinct level. And might very well be preferable to increasing the staff of the FCC and trying to get this federal regulatory commission more deeply involved. At the present time, we're doing neither. The FCC does almost no monitoring of programming at all by radio and television stations. It does very little enforcement of programming standards on local stations. The individual communities involved are almost totally unaware of what their opportunities and their responsibilities really are toward their own stations. And as a consequence, we not only have the kind of programming we do, but the kind of complaints about it that we do.
What do you personally feel of the state of commercial radio today?
It's almost impossible for any one individual to say. There is so much radio, and in many ways that's one of its great virtues. On any evening, you can go up and down the AM and FM dial and find almost whatever you want at any given moment.
Is that true of the smaller localities as well as the larger ones, do you think, Commissioner? New York and Washington, many people think, do have a great diversity of radio programming, but when you get out into some outlying areas, there isn't so much choice.
I think you're right. You can drive across the country and go up and down the AM band as you cross it, and with few exceptions, the programming certainly does not provide the variety that we have in either Washington or New York.
Let me ask you something I've been curious about, Commissioner. The FCC started a rule first of this year that stations in the major cities, 100,000 population or over, which had AM and FM outlets, had to divorce the programming of those stations at least 50% of the time. This had the effect of creating quite a few more stations in the larger centers, where it would seem as though there was less, the least need for more diversity. I think many people in broadcasting feel that the effect of this rule has been to fractionalize audiences further in a medium that is already has an overabundance of stations. Might it not have been more useful to have split the AM/FM programming in the smaller localities than the larger?
Well, there are a number of problems there, Dick. We had a case recently involving application for an FM station in Paris, Kentucky, where the applicant owned the only newspaper and the only AM station, and there was no television station there. And that raises questions of concentration of control in local communities. The problem was there that it appeared, although again, there was some question as to how much the local community had been alerted as to what its opportunities were and the fact that this property was available. Nevertheless, it appeared that there simply were no other applicants. There were no other people in that area who were capable of starting an FM station, with the exception of this fellow who applied. There will be complete duplication of programming in that case, so it illustrates what it is you're talking about. It appeared that the question was whether Paris, Kentucky was to have an FM station that would provide nighttime service, the AM station being only a daytime station, or whether it would have none. And given that choice, it seemed to me in that case probably better to let it have some FM programming and to have this station operating during the evening hours, rather than to wait longer for another applicant to come along and make it forego having any FM service at all. And I think this is probably the although again, we don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know. And that must be said with regard to so many issues before the FCC. We simply don't have the information we need. The data hasn't been analyzed. We don't know the significance of what we're called upon to do. We don't know what alternative courses of action are open to us. But it appears that in all probability, FM needs a bit of a boost, that it would be very difficult in many of these communities to insist upon total diversity of programming from the two outlets and still have them operate at all. And that being the case, that's the kind of issue that you're up against.
Before our time gets away from us, Commissioner, I want to get into the subject of the Carnegie Commission report on educational television, President Johnson's recommendations. By the way, you are an appointee of President Johnson, but not a relative, are you not?
You're right on both counts.
And the Ford Foundation Commission proposal for educational satellite-funded television and radio. Would you tell us what your general views are on the need for an educational going second service in this country, and any thoughts you have as to the role that the FCC should be playing at this time in this issue?
Well,
that's a large question.
A lot of questions tied up in one there, Dick, but no, I'm happy to talk about it. I think that educational broadcasting and its opportunities to play an even greater role in our country today, whether you call it public television or educational television or whatever, is in many ways the number one issue before the nation right now in the communications field. It's certainly made it a very exciting and rewarding time for me to be here, to come in at a time when the Ford Foundation was preparing and presenting to the Commission its proposals, and the Carnegie Commission then came out with its report. And certainly President Johnson's a very prompt response and a very creative proposal to Congress, I think, is to be very highly commended, and I hope he gets the credit for that he's really entitled to, because it takes a real order of magnitude of leadership to come forward with some proposals and see something come from it. And I think the president has done that, and I think he's come forward with a program that is politically realistic and responsible, as well as being imaginative and creative and constructive. And I'm very hopeful that that something can come out of this this year. I think we ought to make every effort to pursue it with that goal in mind. And if we don't make it this year, then to have a better chance next year.
I think you've been critical of the FCC's failure to take more of a leading role in this matter, haven't you?
Well, as I indicated, I think this is one of the most important issues before us as a nation. I could list a half a dozen others in the communications field that I think are the five or six next most important issues. And in all of these areas, I think I would like to see the FCC play a more creative and constructive role in the area of educational broadcasting. As I indicate, the leadership here has come from President Johnson himself personally, people on the White House staff. Senators Magnuson and Pastore, Senate Commerce Committee, and their staff, from the Ford Foundation, Bundy and Friendly, and the really superb group of consultants that they brought together, and the Killian and the Carnegie Commission, and the really masterful job they did of calling upon the resources of the country and attempting to come forward with a reasonable a program. And there have been contributions from other institutions and many, many individuals throughout the country. Certainly the National Association of Educational Broadcasters that you referred to has played a very heavy role in this and is to be highly commended. Throughout, the FCC has, it must be said in all candor, not really contributed much in the way of a substantive report of a quality and content comparable to that of Ford or Carnegie. It should also be noted, in fairness, we do have a hearing going on at this time. The FCC did initiate this hearing last spring, long before either proposal came in response to the ABC Network's proposal that it operate a satellite. And that hearing has been going on now for almost a year, and at some point, presumably, once testimony has been received and that hearing has been wound up, there will be some kind of a report coming forth from the FCC. I think that the chairman, Rosal Hyde, has a deep personal interest in this subject and has made personally a great contribution to the field, even though this hasn't taken the form of a public role, and would like to see the FCC do much more. But I would like to have seen the FCC come in earlier with more. Not in the way of dictating results, any more than Carnegie or Ford or the president is dictating results, but in the way of encouraging discussion, coming forward with positive and provocative proposals that will move us on toward consensus and some action.
It's a case, isn't it, Commissioner, of Congress needing to establish a public policy with respect to the domestic satellites that they're proposing to loft. To interconnect radio and television, both commercial and educational, and also to make a determination of whether or not the government is to inject itself into the funding of educational radio and television. Aren't these issues which Congress must decide before the FCC can really do anything?
Yes, there are a number of issues that are terribly significant and must be resolved, and many of these Congress must play a role. The question is, what contribution can the FCC make to that congressional determination? Should we call upon the Senate Commerce Committee staff to do the staff work, or should the FCC contribute some of the staff work, pose the alternatives and the issues to Congress, and then await congressional direction? And again, it seems to me we would be serving Congress better were we to play that kind of a role. But you're quite right. One of the issues before Congress is the extension of the funding of the Educational Television Facilities Act, which expires in June of 67. The funding issue, how much money, how's the money to be raised, the role of the government in making these funds available and in determining how they are to be spent, is a very crucial issue. The interconnection issue is very important. The role of radio, as distinguished from television, is very important.
In that connection, Commissioner, it was noteworthy that in the wording of the bill Senator Magnuson has introduced this week, calling for the establishment of a public corporation. It's referred to as a corporation for public broadcasting rather than a corporation for public television, as the Carnegie Commission phrased it in their report. What would be your thoughts as to whether or not the thing should be broadened to be designated a corporation for public broadcasting as opposed just to television?
I was very pleased to see that President Johnson in his message and Senator Magnuson in his role in Congress in his response, both went out on their own to include radio within this concept rather than limiting it to television. It's true that television is certainly the newest, the most dramatic in some ways, and has had the greatest, most recent impact. But radio, I think, is going through a rebirth, a very exciting era to come. A lot of very constructive and exciting things can be done on radio that some of the stations are experimenting with, and I know the National Association of Educational Broadcasters would like to do through their radio division. Radio has many advantages. It's an entirely different medium and far more pervasive in many ways. The number of portable radio sets, automobile radios, radios on the beach, and everywhere we go. And it's a very much a cheaper medium to work within in terms of creativity. You can test an idea on radio for the price of a portable tape recorder that might cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars to do in television with a pilot program of some kind.
Would you think that there would be a useful purpose served by the interconnection of the educational radio stations in the country by satellite, for example?
Well, particularly when you bring satellite into it, this is something that obviously is a very complex question I want more information on, but I think interconnection is terribly important in radio as it is in television, that much of the essence of this medium lies in its instantaneity, the fact that people all over the country are at the same moment participating in an event is an integral part of much that we know as broadcasting. There are many shows, of course, where that's not necessary. Certainly local shows, it's not necessary. But in terms of reporting live events at the time, there's certainly no substitute. And even as simply a device for getting shows around, it's often, at least would appear to be, simply cheaper to interconnect and have simultaneity rather than try to peddle tapes, either video or audio tapes.
There is a persistent rumor in the broadcasting industry, Commissioner, I don't know whether you've heard it or not, that the commercial chains are preparing or would like to abandon their radio networks entirely. I think that it's even been predicted that within 2 or 3 years there might not be any more commercial networks. Would you feel that if this came to pass, that the educational system or the non-commercial system might be even more necessary for purposes of keeping the public informed across the country?
Well, that's quite a hypothesis you've tossed in.
No.
I personally, and as a government official, would hate to even deal with it on a hypothetical basis. But certainly, you'd be quite right. I think educational broadcasting can play a very important role, without regard to what happens to the commercial networks. And I wish them continued success as well.
Commissioner, it was very nice visiting with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dick.
Commissioner Nicholas Johnson was tonight's guest on The Truth About Radio, a WNEW inquiry.
This program was distributed by National Educational Radio. This is the National Educational Radio Network.